Chapter 4. A Bunch of Heather. It was a glorious morning, and so warm that I went up on deck without any hat or cloak, glad to have the sunlight playing on my hair and the soft breeze blowing on my face. The scene was perfectly enchanting. The mountains were bathed in a delicate rose-purple glow, reflected from the glory now gone of the sunrise. The water was as still as an inland lake, and the hills around us were reflected in it as in a mirror. A flock of seagulls floated round our vessel like fairies. Now and again one or more of them would rise with eager cries to wing its graceful flight high through the calm air and alight again with a flash of silver pinions on the translucent blue. While I stood gazing in absorbed delight at the beauty surrounding me, Captain Derrick called to me from his little bridge, where he stood with folded arms looking down. "Good morning. What do you think of the mystery now?" "Mystery?" And then his meaning flashed upon me. "Oh, the yacht that anchored near us last night. Is she not still here?"
"No." And the captain's look expressed volumes. "Where has she gone, and how?"
I felt strangely abandoned by her disappearance. She was gone. There was no sign of her anywhere. The look I gave the captain was almost desolate. "Did she leave very early?" I asked. The captain's fuzzy brows met portentously.
"Aye, very early. So early that the watch never saw her go. He must have missed an hour, and she must have gained one."
"How strange," I exclaimed. "May I come on the bridge?"
"Certainly."
I ran up the little steps and stood beside him, looking out to the farthest line of sea and sky. "What do you think about it?" I asked. "Was she a real yacht or a ghost?" The captain did not smile. His brow was furrowed with perplexed consideration.
"She was no ghost," he said, "but her ways were ghostly. That is, she made no noise, and she sailed without wind. Mr. Harlan may say what he likes. I stick to that. She had no steam, but she carried full sail, and she came into the sound with all her canvas bellying out, as though driven by a stormy sou'wester. There's been no wind all night, yet, as you see, she's gone, and not a man on board heard the weighing of her anchor. When she went and how she went beats me altogether."
At that moment we caught sight of a small rowing boat coming out to us from the shore, pulled by one man, who bent to his oars in a slow, listless way, as though disinclined for the labor.
"Boat ahoy!" shouted the captain.
The man looked up and signaled in answer. A couple of our sailors went to throw him a rope as he brought his craft alongside. He had come, so he explained, in his soft, slow, almost unintelligible Highland dialect, with fresh eggs and butter, hoping to effect a sail. The steward was summoned, and bargaining began. I listened and looked on, amused and interested, and presently I suggested to the captain that it might be well to ask this man if he had seen the yacht, whose movements appeared so baffling and inexplicable. The captain at once took the hint.
"Say, Donald," he began invitingly, "did you see the big yacht that came in last night about 10 o'clock?
"Oh, I," was the slow answer. "But my name's no Donald. It's just Jamie."
Colonel Derrick laughed cheerfully.
"Beg pardon, Jamie, then. Did you see the yacht?"
"Oh, I've seen her many a day. She's a real gentleman."
I smiled. "The yacht?" Jamie looked up at me.
"Ah, my lady, you'll be making a fool of Jamie. But Jamie's no fool with the right sort, and the yacht is a gentleman, and the gentleman's the yacht, for it's the gentleman that pays whatever."
Captain Derrick became keenly interested.
"The gentleman? The owner of the yacht, you mean?"
Jamie nodded.
"Just that,"
and proceeded to count out his store of new-laid eggs with great care as he placed them in the steward's basket.
"What's his name?"
"Ah, that's our McLernan," said Jamie with a cunning look. "I canna say it rightly.
Can you say it wrongly? I suggested.
I wouldn't,
he replied. And he lifted his eyes, which were dark and piercing, to my face.
I darena.
Is he such a terrible gentleman, then? Inquired Captain Derrick with a smile. Jamie's countenance was impenetrable.
You'll be seeing her for yourself, wherever, he said. You'll no miss her in the waters twixt here and sky.
He stooped and fumbled in his basket, presently bringing out of it a small bunch of pink bell heather, the delicate, waxen type of blossom, which is found only in mossy, marshy places.
The gentleman wanted as much as I could find of this, he said. And he had it all but this wee bitty. Will my lady wear it for luck?
I took it from his hand. As a gift? I said, smiling.
I wouldn't take no money for it,
he answered, with a curious expression of something like fear passing over his brown, weather-beaten fairies.
'Tis fairies making.
I put the little bunch in my dress. As I did so, he doffed his cap.
Good day to you. I'll not be seeing you this way again.
Why not? How do you know?
One way in and another way out, he said,
his voice sinking to a sort of meditative croon.
One road to the west, one to the east, and round about to the meeting place, or I'll be making it clear sailing.
Without wind, eh? Interposed Captain Derrick. Like your friend, the gentleman? How does he manage that business? Jamie looked round with a frightened air, like an animal scenting danger. Then shouldering his empty basket, he gave us a hasty nod of farewell, and scrambling down the companion ladder without another word, was soon in his boat again, rowing away steadily and never once looking back. A wild chap, said the captain. Many of these fellows get half daft living so much alone in desolate places like Mull, and seeing nothing all the time but cloud and mountain and sea. He seems to know something about that yacht, though.
That yacht is on your brain, Captain, I said with a smile. I feel quite sorry for you. And yet I dare say if we meet her again, the mystery will turn out to be very simple.
It will have to be either very simple or very complex, he answered. I shall need a good deal of teaching to show me how a sailing yacht can make steam speed without wind.
Ah, good morning, sir.
And we both turned to greet Mr. Harland, who had just come up on deck. He looked ill and careworn, as though he had slept badly, and he showed but faint interest in the tale of the strange yacht's sudden exit.
It amuses you, doesn't it?
He said, addressing me with a little cynical smile, wrinkling up his forehead and eyes. Anything that cannot be at once explained is always interesting and delightful to a woman. That is why mediums make money.
Quite so, I replied, but let me say that I am not a medium.
True, I forgot.
He rubbed his hand wearily over his brows, then asked, did you sleep well?
Splendidly. And I must really thank you for my lovely rooms. They are almost too luxurious, fit for a princess.
Why a princess? He queried ironically. Princesses are not always agreeable personages. I know one or two, fat, ugly, and stupid. Some of them are even dirty in their persons and in their habits. There are certainly princesses in Europe who ought to be disinfected before being given rooms anywhere.
I laughed. Oh, you are very bitter.